And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Great to be with you this morning. If you wish to join our conversation, give us a call at any time at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Okay, I heard you. You want to talk more about Bernie Sanders' win in New Hampshire, and I promise we will. You want to talk more about the criminal investigation that was recently closed by the Attorney General on Annette Smith, and we'll do that too. And maybe if we get time, I'd like to spend some time exploring WCAX's request for more information from state government on the governor's travel expenses to Paris. And also, coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk with Tiffany Bloomley, Director of Change, the Story of Vermont, and Carrie Brown, Executive Director of the Vermont Commission on Women. We'll find out what Change the Story means for Vermont women and girls. But first up, let's continue our discussion we began yesterday, and it generated a lot of interest, and some of you didn't get a chance to call in, so now's your chance if you wish to give us a call. I asked the question yesterday, what was your take on the results of the New Hampshire primary? Do you think Senator Bernie Sanders will be the Democratic presidential nominee, beating Hillary Clinton for that nomination? And some, after I went off the air yesterday, some of you reversed the question to me and asked me, well, what were my thoughts? So let me just sort of go over some of the thoughts that I've generated over the last couple of days when I was down there and when I came back to sort of fulfill your request. It's interesting, for me at least, it's fair to say that Bernie Sanders exceeded expectations. You know, he virtually tied Clinton in Iowa, and then he went on to really shellack her in New Hampshire, winning by almost 22 percentage points. That's a lot, and it exceeded, actually, the polls that I saw that were predicting between 13 and 20%. Nationally, Sanders has been gaining on Clinton in polls, and remember this, there was a time not too long ago when Clinton had substantial leads in New Hampshire, Iowa, and of course nationally. And it was a safe bet that Clinton was on her way to the nomination. So what is propelling the Sanders campaign to deliver the results that they are? And what are some of the primary reasons why Clinton has stumbled in the primaries so far? Well, I think there's two primary reasons for Clinton stumbling. One is strategic mistakes that she's made in the campaign and Hillary Clinton as a candidate. You know, the Clinton campaign has struggled for a strategy that can counter Sanders' message that the economic and political systems in the United States are rigged, and they're rigged to favor politicians and the rich. And he makes the case that Hillary Clinton is part of the problem, not the solution, because he's been hammering away at the fact that Clinton is beholden to Wall Street firms that paid her lucrative speaking fees. She hasn't found a way to counter that effectively. Instead, she's concocted these ineffective tactics to slow down Sanders' momentum. For example, you remember she tried in the last debate to portray herself as a progressive. She tried to out-progressive a progressive. And you're never going to win that battle. You're never going to win that battle because it fails the credibility test. Nobody believes, after Hillary Clinton's been part of the establishment, that somehow she's now as progressive or more progressive than Bernie Sanders. Another tactic that failed miserably was trying to shame young women that were supporting Sanders as somehow an affront to feminism. And Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State and Clinton campaign surrogate, she said, and this backfired, this really backfired on the Clinton campaign, she said that there's a special place in hell for women who don't support each other. And that's a quote. There's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other. That tactic backfired, especially among young women who mostly support Sanders. And they made it widely known on social media that they were expressing their feminism by supporting the candidate that best connects with them. But by far, the number one issue that Clinton has problems with, in my opinion, is the issue of trust. And if you look at all the exit polls that came out in New Hampshire, Hillary Clinton has a problem establishing trust with the voters. And Bernie Sanders doesn't. Actually, he has that trust factor. And this is an issue. Trust with the voters is essential at winning elections. And if you can't turn that around, if you can't change it, certainly the campaign is in trouble. Luckily for Clinton, the campaign now goes to South Carolina and Nevada. Recent polls, and these polls don't take into account Bernie's recent successes, especially in New Hampshire, find Clinton maintaining a sizable lead in those two states over Sanders. And Clinton really needs to have a clear victory over Sanders in these two states to slow down his momentum. And in politics, momentum is everything. The prospects of slowing Sanders down in South Carolina and Nevada, the upcoming election calendar that most think favors Clinton, and the fact that Clinton still has a sizable lead over what are called superdelegates, those party and elected officials who pledge support and can vote at the convention, is probably giving some of her supporters a bit of comfort when there hasn't been too much comfort after Iowa and New Hampshire. But you know what? Bernie Sanders continues to exceed expectations. And as I said yesterday, he doesn't need to necessarily win in South Carolina and Nevada in order to do that. All he has to do is come close. And that, in presidential politics, exceeding expectations is just as good as a win. You know what I find fascinating? And one of the things is sort of as an aside from everything that we discussed. You know, Governor Shumlin and U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy, two Vermont politicians who support Hillary Clinton, are probably trying to figure out if they made the right calculation now. No doubt they calculated that Bernie Sanders' presidential aspirations would have ended by now, and most Democrats would be supporting Clinton. Then, of course, Bernie supporters, perhaps with a quick exit, would have forgiven them for their endorsement because his candidacy never really amounted to much. So no harm, no foul in that sort of scenario. But boy, that scenario has rapidly changed. The calculation that Bernie would disappear from the national scene in quick order, boy, I don't see that happening. I just don't see that happening. And chances are that he will continue his presidential bid longer than anybody expected, including myself, perhaps up to the convention. But one thing is for sure, the Vermont Democratic hierarchy, even they underestimated Bernie Sanders because most of them are supporting Hillary Clinton. So I'd be very, very interested in your opinions, your comments. Yesterday, we had a robust sort of conversation. Oh, by the way, some of you yesterday called in and wanted to know some of the vote totals. So after the show yesterday, I went in and got them with 89% of the vote in. I didn't check back today. Bernie Sanders had 138,716 votes. Hillary Clinton had 88,827 votes for a total Democratic turnout of 227,543. That's with the 89% of the vote. I haven't gone back to look at that. On the Republican side, there were 260,000 people who cast votes with 89% of the vote in, 92,000 for Donald Trump, 42,000 for John Kasich, 30,000 for Ted Cruz, obviously I'm rounding here, 29,000 for Jeb Bush, 28,000 for Marco Rubio, 19, almost 20,000 for Chris Christie, Carly Fiorina, almost 11,000, Ben Carson, almost 6,000, and Rand Paul, almost 2,000 votes. So for those that were wondering yesterday, the Democrats had 227,543 votes or voters, and the Republicans had 260,065. If you have a comment on the primary on Tuesday in New Hampshire or the future political aspirations of Bernie Sanders, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to the phone line and Liz in Ferrisburg. Liz, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mike. I hate to admit this, but I do not understand superdelegates. So my question is, if Bernie, and I think this is what happened before, if Bernie wins the popular vote, can superdelegates override that? And what would happen if he did win the popular vote and if superdelegates were able to do that? So I'll hang up, and if maybe you can explain superdelegates and delegates, okay?
Sure. Thank you very much, Liz. Delegates are, by the way, it would be chaos if that happened. Superdelegates can pledge to any candidate that they want. They can go any place that they want. Normally, they go with the front runner, and they're the ones that will decide, you know, who wins that that convention. It most of the delegates that are done in states and state caucuses and primaries are what are called pledge delegates. So they support, at least in the first round, if there's multiple rounds, at least in the first round, the candidate that they're representing at the convention. But superdelegates can go any place they want. They can do whatever they want. There's a bunch of them pledged for Hillary Clinton right now. They could change their mind. They could go to Bernie Sanders. But most right now, by far, are supporting Hillary Clinton. So, Liz, thank you for your phone call. Great question. Let's go to Michael in Berrytown. Michael, you're on Open Mic.
Thank you, Mike. I wanted to follow up on Liz's question and comment that it seems to me that the democratic process is being thwarted with this whole concept of superdelegates. You've got people, particularly in the Bernie campaign, that are donating money, and these are people that can probably not afford a great deal, unlike what it appears that the Clinton supporters, many of them, can do. And they're out there working, the candidates are working, and then all of a sudden you throw this superdelegate thing into the mix, and it seems to skew it based on however the insiders feel the person is most electable. And it just seems that's part of what's rigged that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie talk about. It's more than the rigged economy. It's rigged elections. It seems like it just skews everything, having these superdelegates. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Michael, and I really think that's the superdelegates were put in place because they were the Democrats were worried, and I think, and you have to correct me perhaps after if I'm wrong, they were worried about the reelection chances of Jimmy Carter and the fact that you know, he was not popular at the time, and thinking that if they had a mechanism to override what was happening in the primary if it was close. At that time, it was close between Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter. If they had a mechanism to override what was happening in the primary for the sake of the party, that those superdelegates would be needed. I kind of agree with you. I mean, it seems kind of preposterous to go through all of this, and if it comes down to a very, very close election nomination process here, superdelegates deciding who is going to be the nominee after all this money, after all this time, after all these primaries, it seems, and it's a big number. I mean, it's not a small number of delegates. You know, you have to get X amount of delegates. It's not a small number of delegates. So it's an interesting process. I think perhaps it's something that certainly Elizabeth Warren is bringing to the attention, and certainly Bernie is bringing to the attention. It's certainly an interesting process. Rama from Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic. Good morning. Rama?
Yeah. Am I there now?
You are here now.
Okay. Good morning. Hey, listen, real quick, this bit about superdelegates and all is in reference to what the last caller was talking about, I don't think it has anything to do with democracy at all. These are political party machines that we're discussing here. And, personally, I think the government should get out of the business of paying for anything to do with the political parties, including these primaries. What is anti-democratic is the fact that we have a governmental system that actively subsidizes this two political party system and has voting systems throughout the country at the national, state, and local levels that actively encourage this two political party system. And that's where the real problem is. Personally, I think we should get out. I don't care how the Democrats or the Republicans or the Libertarians or the Progressives or anybody else wants to nominate their nominees. I really don't. What I care about is, am I locked into voting for one or the other? And unfortunately, especially at the national level, we certainly are locked into voting for either the Democratic or the Republican candidate for the most part. So I would rather, I would just assume, hey, cut the political parties loose. They can do their own thing. I don't care. And let's institute something like instant runoff voting so that we're not locked into having to choose between bad and worse.
Thanks, Rama. Thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Tom in the booth. We're going to go to Tom in Montpelier. But right after that, what I need to do is probably take a break and come back and talk with Tiffany Bloomley and Carrie Brown. So we'll take this call from Tom in Montpelier. Tom, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. Two things I'd like to touch upon. One, I think Bernie is to be commended for conducting himself as a gentleman in regards to dealing with Hillary Clinton. And I'm hoping that it might be possible at some point along the line, a number of people have kind of asserted that Bernie is a bit weak on foreign policy issues. And, of course, Hillary can point out her experience as Secretary of State. And I'm hoping that perhaps he or someone in his campaign organization would point out that when he's president, that he would instruct his Secretary of State to make proper use of their email communications, and that the embassies abroad would be properly protected. And that I think a little bit of, without him being ungentlemanly, but a little bit of pushback as to, like, if Hillary wants to tout her experience as Secretary of State, I don't think she has much to tout. The second point I'd like to make is that you mentioned earlier about the Dems in Vermont, Leahy and Shumlin, and about misgauging Bernie Sanders' chances in the whole primary process. And I would say, you know, Leahy has served the state of Vermont quite well for a number of years. But you know what? The thing of the matter is that if a person's support is predicated on party and on chances and on strategies rather than what you believe, then you know what? You're part of the problem. And I think that at this point in time, you know, I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said in order for democracy to survive, there had to be a revolution every 20 years. He wasn't talking about picking up weapons. And, you know, Bernie is talking about a real political revolution, something that really can resuscitate our democracy. And I think, frankly, that Leahy and Shumlin and the other Dems in Vermont, you know, they're passé, behind the times. Let's get with the revolution.
Tom, thank you for your phone call. Coming up, we're going to talk with Tiffany Bloomley, director of Change the Story of Vermont, and Kerry Brown, the executive director of the Vermont Commission on Women. We'll find out what Change the Story means and other issues that impact Vermont women and girls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're swinging here in the studio on the bumper music. Thank you, Tom, for the bumper music. It's my pleasure. It is a great pleasure to welcome Tiffany Bloomley, director of Change the Story of Vermont, and Kerry Brown, executive director of the Vermont Commission on Women. I've known Tiffany for a long time, admired the work that she's done in Vermont. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
One of the questions that I wanted to sort of start out with, what is the mission of Change the Story?
Well, Change the Story isn't an organization. It's an initiative that is fueled by three statewide organizations that have been committed for a long time to women's economic security. So it's the Commission on Women, it's Vermont Works for Women, and the Women's Fund. And the Women's Fund is the primary funder. It is perceived or envisioned as an initiative with a shelf life, because if we're successful, then we will have helped to start a lot of conversations and built awareness across institutions in the state that advance women's economic security, and there won't be a reason for Change the Story to be around anymore. But we're the
idea. So what are you going to do after that?
I'll find something. But the objective is to move the needle faster. We got three organizations that have been working on these issues for a long time, but we haven't been able to make a lot of progress in certain areas. And women's economic security is not just important to women, it's important to their families, but it's also really important to Vermont's economy. So we banded together to try to move the needle faster on certain issues. But this work isn't confined to us. We're really dependent upon being able to influence institutions, whether it's state institutions, legislature, state agencies, or higher ed, K through 12 ed, to do things differently in light of data that we're producing.
You released a 2016 status report entitled Women, Work, and Wages in Vermont. What did you find out?
A lot of things. When I headed Vermont Works for Women, I was frustrated because it was very difficult to find information on women's economic status. There was little data that I could find in any one place. Data that I found in various places didn't necessarily jive. And Kerry, really, and the commission had the idea that as a start to our work, we really needed to develop baseline information to understand, well, how well are women doing? And so we decided to issue a series of briefs over the course of the winter and early spring that paint a fuller and more nuanced picture of how well women are doing, where we're doing well, and where, in fact, we may be behind the national averages, or in where we as a state really need to prioritize a different approach to policy because of the impact on the economy as a whole. So,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, so one of the things to note is that women in Vermont work at a rate that's 7 percentage points higher than the national average. So women are a critical part of the economy. And yet 43% of women who work full-time can't they can't pay for their basic living expenses, as defined by our own state joint fiscal office in the basic needs budget. 43% is a lot. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about women who are working full time. We also found that we looked at the wage gap in a lot of different ways, and the wage gap is explained in part by occupational segregation, that is where women and men work and what those jobs pay. But it's also it's not explained just by that. If you look within occupations, there are some significant wage gaps in fields where women are the dominant workers. In nursing, for example, 83% of nurses are women, but they're making 83 cents on the dollar, on the dollar that men earn. So what's behind that? We don't answer that question, and I think that it's probably pretty complicated. But we're trying to point out why a lot of women aren't able to make ends meet. Carrie, you want to add anything to that?
Well, sure. We've been at the Commission on Women. We used to produce a status report on women on all kinds of different issues every 2 years. And we haven't been able to do that for quite a while. And we also realized that what we needed to do was dive a lot more in depth on women's economic issues, because we know that there's a wage gap in Vermont. In Vermont, full-time women make about 84 cents for every dollar that men make, which is better than the national average, which is around 78, 79 cents, depending on how you measure it. So that's good news. But then the question is, why is that? What's going on with that other 16 cents? And what's going on in a more at a more detailed level. And so this data really lets us get into that much more deeply. And we can look at things like what's happening with women in retirement. So, for instance, in Vermont, women are getting $10,000 on average for their Social Security compared to $20,000 in men, half as much. And then their overall earnings are $15,500 for women compared to $27,000 for men. So there's a huge wage gap there, which has a really significant impact on all the rest of us who are possibly supporting the people who are living in retirement. And as we know, Vermont is aging, and it's only going to be getting worse.
Let me ask you this. So what you've identified this, where do you go from here? How do you transform from identifying these issues, which are significant? I mean, the wage gap issue is significant. How do you go from identifying those issues to putting them into action? And Carrie, I'm turning to you to look.
Sure. Well, one of the things we included in this report was a list of questions at the end that we want people to think about. So we don't have all the answers, but we are providing data and directions for people to think about so that the folks who are making policy, who are making decisions, can take this into consideration when they're doing that. So we ask things like, if you're spending money on economic development initiatives or on workforce development, who's benefiting from that money? Who's getting the jobs? What kind of jobs are they? Are we using the money that we're spending in these areas to perpetuate occupational segregation, to just send more women into lower paying jobs? Or are we using it to combat it and to really make a difference in the long run?
Are you looking for legislation or just a broad conversation among Vermonters about how do we solve this issue?
I think it's all of the above. So we hope that there will be specific legislation that legislators will decide that they need to take action on. But we're also hoping that within existing legislative efforts or other policymaking efforts, that rather than starting new initiatives, they'll just think a little bit more about what's the outcome of the initiatives that we're already doing, and how could we, maybe there's some data that we can collect that we haven't been collecting so that we know what the impact is, and then we can use that to inform our future policy decisions.
Tiffany, if I was trying to describe what Change the Story is it a clearinghouse? Is it sort of bringing people together in order to affect change? Is that what it is?
Yeah, an inelegant analogy might be that we're connective tissue. I think that Change the Story can serve as a spark. There are things that we can throw out there and see, well, who catches them. There are ways in which we can serve as a hearth bring people together to talk about an issue and where we don't have all the answers, but we know that if we can get people to talk about this, we can come up with some ways to deal with this. And sometimes change the story may actually be a torch where there is a particular initiative that all three organizations can really get behind and advance on their own. But I feel, I call myself Carrie's wing gal. I am trying to help support each of the organizations in the work that they do. And I'm hopeful that this data is going to be helpful to all of them in making the case for change. But I have to say, too, you know, we are dependent on, as I said before, for example, VTC just last week had a press conference.
You're taking my question.
Go ahead. Well, you told me you're going to ask it. So the President Dan Smith announced an initiative to recruit, to enroll and graduate significantly more women in four of its programs: mechanical engineering, computer science, civil engineering, and the construction management program. They are programs in which women are probably about 10% of their class. Well, VTC is always going to be interested in enrollment, and this is a market, for example, to tap. But they also understand that diversity in the workplace is a good thing for the workplace, and better decisions are made, and study after study after study is very clear about that. So employers have an incentive to hire more, greater diversity across, you know, all types of diversity as they're bringing in new employees or promoting people to leadership. And that, so at any rate, you know, he made this announcement after several conversations with me and with some and members of the partnership. And, you know, and he said, this is really important. And he stepped forward. Well, if Dan Smith says this is important, it's a lot more powerful than if Tiff Bloomley says it's important. Everybody knows what I'm going to say. But the president of Vermont Technical College, who has a much kind of broader mandate, you know, if this is his priority, then perhaps that will catch on and others will start to take notice and start to count how many people, how many women are actually in this program.
One of the things that I'm interested in, and it's a personal interest in this, is the fact that you can open up those opportunities, but if women aren't guided to those opportunities or girls aren't guided to those opportunities, let me give you an example. My daughter's getting her PhD in physics. It's a pretty lonely business being a woman in physics at the higher education level. How do you encourage women to come into those various professions where it isn't common to have a lot of women? For example, as you cited the statistics, 10% in mechanical engineering, those sort of things.
I think you make a very good point that it's not enough just to open the door and say, come on in. You really have to kind of pave the path and invite people, guide them in. And then once they're through the door, you also have to pay attention to what's happening to them there. Like, as you say, it can be a very lonely spot. And a lot of women will get through that door and then say, well, this is actually not for me. It's a little too lonely. I don't really want to be the pioneer. And so Vermont's been doing a pretty good job with trying to expose girls to different kinds of career opportunities, but it's not, as we know from the Enough Said report that Vermont Works for Women did, it's not really enough. They're not really seeing the options that are available to them. And so it's really up to schools, it's up to communities, it's up to parents, it's up to people to be talking with young women about all the options that are open to them, giving them role models, giving them a chance to see what might be available so that they understand what these different careers are. And then once they make the decision to step through that door, it's paying attention to what's the climate like. Is it a supportive environment for women? Is it a place where they don't feel alienated because, you know, there are pictures on the walls that they're uncomfortable with, for example, or there's a climate there that is alienating to them? So all of those things are, they're also long-term efforts. You really have to stick with it. You can't say we're going to make a big push and we're going to, you know, advertise, make some nice posters that have women on them and get them into our programs. You have to stick with it for years. It's an investment.
Speaking of my daughter, and I don't mean to put you on the spot because it's political. The question I'm
but we know you do.
I gotta ask this question. My daughter was incensed by something that Madeleine Albright said and something that Gloria Steinem said. And basically what Madeleine Albright said, and I think I said this in the first segment, that there's a place in hell for women that don't support women. It was something like that. I may be messing it up. And then Gloria Steinem said the only reason Bernie Sanders is getting the women, the millennial vote, is because there's guys there and they want to go for the guys. My daughter was, I would classify her as a feminist. She was incensed by that. What's your take on that? And you don't have to answer. I mean,
Sure. I think that there's probably a really significant generational issue that this is exposing. That young women are, in my experience working with young women over many years, they tend to be, and I'm speaking generally here, resistant to the idea that they have something working against them. You know, they're being brought up to feel very strong and very capable and independent and able to make their own decisions. And so when we try to tell them, well, you know, the deck is kind of stacked against you, they're very, very resistant to that. And so I think we're seeing some of that young women are in particular outraged by this idea that they're not making decisions based on their own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one thing that I would say is that I thought it was unfortunate. Frankly, I don't think it was probably helpful to Hillary's campaign. I have deep respect for both of the women that you mentioned. And I have to say that I have met a lot of young women over the last several years, as I've been talking about the Enough Said report and my work, who have said to me, you know, I thought it was going to be different. And, you know, they may be in their late 20s, early 30s, and they haven't gotten the promotions that they thought they were going to get. They are still struggling to balance work and family life, and feel that the world of work has not caught up with the realities of families today. And so, I think that, you know, there are a lot of women, young women, millennial women out there who are very much aware of the challenges that women face. But certainly don't want to be told that the reason that they're attracted to Bernie Sanders' campaign is that there are men there.
With that will be the last presidential politics question I'll ask. I'll come back and we'll talk about some of the barriers that women face in this state. We're speaking with Tiffany Bloom and Carrie Brown. This is Open Mic. We'll be back right in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking with Tiffany Bloomley, who I got the name right this time. I don't understand, Tiffany. I've known you for years, and why I have mispronounced that last name is beyond me. But Tiffany Bloomley is the Director of Change, The Story of Vermont. It's an organization that sort of pulls together everyone. It's the tissue, I think you said, the human tissue of a
connected
tissue of bringing people together. And Carrie Brown, the executive director of the Vermont Commission of Women. And we're talking about issues that affect girls and women here in Vermont. If you wish to join our conversation, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Carrie, let's turn to you for a moment. What are some of the barriers for women and girls in Vermont?
Well, I think we look at the data that's in this report, we can see some outcomes that tell us a little bit about what some of those barriers are. So women are making less money than men. They're working part-time more often than men. 25% of women in Vermont are working part-time compared to 11% of men. And a big part of why they're doing that is because women are bearing the brunt of family care responsibilities at a much greater rate than men are. And so that impacts their decisions about what kinds of jobs to have, whether they have flexibility in their jobs, whether they're going to work part-time or full-time, which over the course of their lifetime affects their earnings. They need to make considerations about childcare and how they're going to care for elder parents. Women are much more likely to be caring for aging relatives than men are. And so those are the kinds of things that can, over the course of a career, have a really big impact and give us some of the what we're seeing in retirement, where we see the lower income and the lower Social Security earnings because women have less time actually at work in putting money into Social Security.
One of the things that I noticed from a previous life when we were looking at incarcerated women is that they do bear the full responsibility when they come out from prison. Obviously, you know, getting into prison, they probably burned a lot of bridges in getting into prison. But when they come out, it's pretty lonely out there. You know, they've burned those bridges, so there's no housing. There's no opportunity for housing. There's no opportunity for other sort of services. But the people in their life have left their life. So it is interesting because when males come out of prison, the dynamic is different, mm-hmm. which tells you there is a huge difference in how various things affect various genders, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to get here. And what you're describing are some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example. Women who go to prison, they're usually the ones who are taking care of their children. And so when they go to prison, then what happens to their kids? And when men go to prison, they're less likely to be the ones. And so whoever was taking care of the children is still taking care of them and bringing them to visit and providing that kind of support that's still there when they get out, which is a really different situation for women.
Tiffany or Carrie, how do you break down these barriers? Tiffany, you know me for a long time. I like results. So how do you get results to break down these barriers?
Well, I think that the way to address the issues that this brief and the Enough Said report addressed are many. I mean, I think that there are kind of different strategies that you need to employ. Carrie already talked about exposing young women to a wide variety, the widest variety of career options. And we have to be really deliberate about that. And that has to, it's not just enough to talk about something, but if you can put tools in somebody's hands or you can actually take them to a conference where they're able to sit in heavy equipment and all of a sudden discover, I love this, all of a sudden then, and this is a true story, that person who was a senior then goes on to intern at the Agency of Transportation, and then she gets a job. And it is not a job she ever, ever thought of for herself. So we have to be incredibly deliberate about that kind of career exposure. There are certainly, I think, legislative things that might make a difference. The fact that women are really underrepresented on a number of boards and commissions in the state is something that could become a state priority. Lots of states have said there needs to be gender balance. And why? Because decisions will be better and more informed by a wide range of perspectives. I think that employers are a huge piece of this, and one of the things that Change the Story is working on is an employer initiative that is engaging 11 employers, most of them from Chittenden County. It includes Vermont Gas and Casella and 7th Gen and the City of Burlington. We're asking them to really look at gender equity within their workplace in terms of hiring, in terms of promotion, in terms of workplace climate. And they've committed to studying, to really looking at their own workplaces and exchanging ideas over the next year, meeting once a month. They're devoting incredible amount of time. Well, if these employers who are leaders in their industries can actually affect changes in their own workplace, then they'll talk about it. And then they'll talk about it with their peers. They have way more influence, like Dan Smith, than I will ever on kind of how the workplace can adapt to the changing lives of families.
Carrie, I think she underestimates her ability to change things, but I'll leave it as that. I mean, Dan Smith is a wonderful person at Vermont Tech, but Tiffany Bloomley definitely has some oomph here in Vermont in terms of getting things done. When you reach out to females, it would seem to me you have to reach out to the males to change the mindset of the males. How do you do that?
Well, Tiffany talked about the work with employers that Change the Story is doing, and I think that's a great example because workplaces are made up of men and women, and we all need to be making these kinds of decisions together. And so the work that Change the Story is doing is asking employers to think not just about – we like to talk about equal pay a lot at the commission, right? It's, we've been talking about it for 51 years, 52 years. And that it's not just a matter of paying men and women the same amount for the same job. That's a big part of it. But it is also, but say you're doing that, and we have a lot of great employers in Vermont who are doing that. What else can they do to be kind of helping to close that wage gap? So it's about recruiting women into jobs where they're going to be paying more. So looking at who are the, who's putting together the who's on the assembly line, you know, who's doing the technical work and trying to get more women into those. And so this is a way to engage. Often it's men who are making those decisions.
Tiffany, Carrie, just to wrap up here, I mean, we've got about two and a half minutes here. How can people help with your mission?
Well, they can go to our website, changethestoryvt.org. Take a look at resources that we've got online. Contact us to let us know that they're interested in being on our mailing list, because we'll be releasing a series of briefs over the course of the winter. So that's one way. I also think that I'd like to encourage everybody to read this brief, the first brief, Women, Work, and Wages, which can be found on the website, and forward any questions that you have, because these are living documents. These are not, they're not static. I am happy to take in. I want people's reactions, because we can keep making this better and more relevant to Vermonters.
Carrie?
Well, and this research that we're doing is an ongoing process, and our hope is that we'll be able to continue it well beyond the Change the Story initiative work, and that we'd love to hear from people about the kinds of data that they're looking for and how they're using it.
Thank you both to Tiffany Bloomley and Carrie Brown. I appreciate the time and the information. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It was great to be here.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll check in with our colleagues at Talk Media News and your phone calls after that about Bernie, Annette Smith, or if we have the time, the refusal of state government to provide all the expenses of the governor's Paris trip. As if you have, some of you sometimes have to go to work, have to do other things. If you want to come back and hear this program, all you have to do is go to wdevradio.com, click on the Open Mic podcast, and you will be able to find any show that you may have missed. Whether you're working, whether you're doing something else, you can always listen to Open Mic by going on to that broadcast. Like I said, I wanted to thank our guests today, Tiffany Bloomley and Carrie Brown. And what we'll do next is take your phone calls. So this is Open Mic on WDEV News Radio, broadcasting on AM 550 from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM from Island Pond. And as I said earlier, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Again, I want to thank Tiffany Bloomley and Carrie Brown for coming in and talking about women's issues. And shortly, we'll be talking with our colleagues at Talk Media News. Obviously, there's a debate coming up, a Democratic debate, and I wanted to talk to them about some of the issues that they think will be coming up. And on the line with us today is our friend Bob Ney. Bob, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. One of the things that we've been discussing this morning, and it spilled over from yesterday, and you can presume that it's a big topic here in Vermont, is the Bernie Sanders victory in New Hampshire. And I got the pleasure to meet many of your colleagues down in New Hampshire for the two days I was down there. Can we expect some different tactics from Hillary Clinton, because she seems to be struggling, in at least in my mind, trying to counter Sanders' message that the political and economic systems are rigged. And Bernie Sanders has sort of made her part of the problem and not the solution by hammering away at these Wall Street these speaking fees that she has. And she either she was late to the party on trying to counter this, or she and she hasn't been really effective in how to counter it. Will we see some of that in the upcoming debate?
Well, I think so. But, you know, I wrote, I predicted Bernie would win by 20 points, and I was pretty accurate. He was 21. But, I said yesterday, and I put this on in a tongue-in-cheek, but the sky's going to open up, and the entire force is going to rain down upon the heretic. The super PACs are going to rain fire on the airwaves and scourge Bernie Sanders, and the House of Clinton shall smile. Now, I wrote that because the Clintons are going to unleash political Armageddon on Bernie Sanders. I mean, it's going to happen. They're almost into a panic mode. They're talking about getting rid of a campaign staff. President Clinton, who I've always admired, his mojo, his political ability, tanked in New Hampshire in a big way, tanked. Had to end up backtracking and apologizing for the, you know, any woman that votes for Bernie Sanders is a sexist. Madeleine Albright and her, you know, they can go to Hades. I mean, the whole thing was a nightmare, honestly. And I think Hillary Clinton, you know, she can call it a smear tactic all she wants. She took the money for the speeches, which was not illegal, but, you know, people were wondering, you know, what's worth, you know, all that kind of money, $200,000 a speech is an average. And so that's not the only issue, though, but it's the whole Wall Street deal. And so I think she's going to slap back at Bernie Sanders on Wall Street. I think there'll be some other issues to get out there, but that's going to be out there. They're not going to let that go. I'm not talking about Sanders, but I'm talking about, you know, the media. They won't let it go. And then they're going to ask her about her loss in New Hampshire, and then maybe the fact that the Democratic Party now is saying, well, you won, Bernie, but we're going to give more delegates to Hillary Clinton.
And that will be through the superdelegates, is that right?
Through the superdelegates. So I just think, and I'm saying all this way, because I think tonight, this is, you know, Hillary Clinton's on edge tonight. She's going to be on edge. This is hers to do worse. She's going into a very critical state where if Bernie Sanders gets close to her, like 10 points behind, she's really going to feel the burn, as they say. So I think tonight's debate is still going to be about which candidate really stands up for working people. And, you know, Sanders is on that like a mantra, you know.
I never understood, and maybe we've discussed this before, but I've never understood the tactic of the last debate where she tried to out-progressive a progressive. And it baffled me that was the strategy. Do you make any rhyme or reason why she tried to do that?
She's falling into a trap, seriously. Look, in my home state of Ohio, I watched it, you know, on the clips. She said, oh, you know, I'm accused of being a moderate. I'm a moderate. Now, you can't say that 4 weeks ago and then turn around and say, no, I'm the super progressive. You know, there's nothing wrong with being John Kasich is a, you know, a moderate of type. He doesn't try to claim to be right of Ted Cruz. And I'm just saying with Hillary Clinton, you know, she can have the vision, be the candidate, be the person. You know, she's a female and all those things. But the one thing I think she can't do with a straight face is say that she is more, quote, progressive than Bernie Sanders. She simply isn't. I sat on the committee when Bernie Sanders not only opposed trade bills, he railed against them. She supported them. That's just one issue. You can't portray yourself of something you completely aren't. And she should really make it positive that, yeah, she's been progressive on some things, but she's absolutely moderate on others. It's not going to work.
One of the things that came out of the exit polls that's got to be troubling to the Clinton campaign is the issue of trust. Clearly, those that wanted to trust their candidate voted for Bernie Sanders. Those that thought trust was the number one issue went heavily for Bernie Sanders. They did not go for Hillary Clinton. Sometimes that is a disaster sign for a politician if they lose the connection, if they lose the trust of their voters. She needs to turn that trust factor around in other states.
It's a biggie because, look, if you're Donald Trump, you want to run against Hillary Clinton because of the fact that, you know, people may not trust Trump, but they don't trust her. And so the whole trust me is out the window. Now, Bernie Sanders, unless there's something I surely don't know, Bernie Sanders, you know, what you saw 30 years ago, what I saw for 11 years, is what you see today. One thing about Bernie Sanders, you can pretty well take him to the bank. And by the way, only 3% of the people polled in America don't trust Bernie Sanders. And those are people that may not even like him, but they trust him.
As you said, the Clinton campaign is probably going to release the dogs from hell down to the, down upon Bernie Sanders. Yeah. That is probably going to come real fast, don't you think?
Yes, and I'm guaranteeing if they overdo it to try to make up for the problems that Hillary Clinton has, it's sort of like, look, to the base when she says, oh, the right wing's after me, that works. To independent voters, to try to convince them that Karl Rove put a server in her house, even that one won't work. So certain things will work, certain things won't. But with her base, with the Democratic base, who are progressive, it's not going to work for her to say that, you know, Bernie Sanders isn't. And that's where she can, you know, pick up their votes, but she can't pretend that, you know, he's one of her when it comes to Wall Street.
One of the things that Bernie has to do, he doesn't necessarily have to win South Carolina and Nevada. All he has to do is exceed expectations. And that's a sort of a nuance in presidential politics. You don't have to necessarily win. You just have to exceed the expectations.
Uh-huh. And look at John Kasich in New Hampshire, you know. And you're right. I mean, if Bernie Sanders loses South Carolina by 10 points, you know, his people will be doing cartwheels across the stage.
What?
Maybe Bernie won't, but
the fact is that Clinton still holds a sizable lead in the superdelegates. Will they peel off from her at some point?
Oh, I'm telling you, what just went down in New Hampshire, the party has to make some kind of cut. You can't just say that, you know, Hillary got beat by 20 points and then we're 21 points, we're just going to change, have the system, the way it operates, hold. That's going to leave a very sour taste.
Are we going to see a change in the Clinton campaign?
Oh, what I think they're going to do, and this could be a huge mistake, and I could be completely wrong, but I'll bet
is that huge with a Y, or is that huge with an H?
Huge, like a Trump huge. I think what they're going to do is they're going to, you know, get rid of some campaign or shuffle some campaign people, and that could be a real problem. So, but again, how do you change the campaign? You got to change Hillary,
and
you can't stand there and go, well, that's what they offered me. You know, I tried that with the government. It didn't get me far when I talked about Jack Abramoff and the scandal I was involved with, you know. Well, that's what he did. Doesn't work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have two primary issues, I think. One is the strategic mistakes they have been making and whether they can correct them and whether they can counter Sanders' message, which is really resonating, and even Bill Clinton said it was resonating, and the candidate herself, Hillary Clinton, she just doesn't seem to be able to connect with the voters, at least in the first couple of primaries.
And she used to. I mean, she used to connect, I think. Now, my progressive friends say, no, Bob, you see, we've been right all the time, but I do. I think she used to connect. Something's disconnected right now. She needs to kind of just relax and say, you know, what's out there on her mind, sort of like Bernie does.
Is it a generational thing that's happening here? Because one of the things, and I'll use my daughter for example, she was outraged by what Madeleine Albright said. And Madeleine Albright, for those who are listening, said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other. My daughter's a millennium, and she is a millennial, I guess is the word, and she is she's a PhD student in physics, and she was absolutely outraged, not only with Madeleine Albright but with Gloria Steinem, because what she said, she expresses her feminism by supporting the candidate that best connects with her, and she doesn't need to gender isn't an issue with her. And was that a mistake, you think?
It was huge. You know, I'm not going to use huge anymore. It was big because I have a great, great millennial Democratic friend who is 190% Hillary Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he contacted me by email and said, oh, my goodness, you know, how on earth can they do this? Now, Madeleine Albright's used this expression, by the way, forever. It's kind of a little cute little quirk with her. She uses that exact expression. And when she used it, you could see Hillary Clinton just about melt, because they probably told her, please don't do that, and she forgot by the time she got out to the stage.
Yeah, but wasn't it staged? I mean, you had Gloria Steinem coming out. You had Madeleine.
And Bill Clinton.
And Bill Clinton coming out. All
You're
with
a
the,
sexist if you support Bernie.
Yeah, all with the same message. They realized that the women vote was going towards Bernie, and they needed to do something about it. Boy, I just,
horrible.
They are... You know, Bill Clinton probably ran one of the smartest campaigns of anybody, and I'm just, he's smarter than that, isn't he?
Well, that's what I was telling Alan Ratner. That's why I predicted 20 points. I said, this is not the Bill Clinton I knew. Something has gone haywire in a short period of time. Not only did he look older, you know, which people, I'm getting older, but he just looked completely like he was on another planet from what he was saying. It's not Bill Clinton. It's not his style. He really... And then Chelsea Clinton ran around bad-mouthing Sanders, and then when the press tried to ask her, well, don't, you know, I don't answer press questions, well, then stay home.
Hey,
and the press wrote about that.
Hey, Bob, as always, thank you for your perspective. It's really appreciated. That's Bob Ney from Talk Media News. Coming up, your phone calls on various issues, including Annette Smith, if you want. We'll continue our conversation with Bernie Sanders, but also an interesting story that's kind of flown under the radar that I want to bring up. It's WCAX asking for more data, more backup on the Paris trip that the governor took. It's asking for the travel expenses so that we can know in terms of what the true expenses were. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you for joining us. If you're just joining us, we've had a robust discussion today on Bernie Sanders and on Bernie Sanders' win in New Hampshire. It started out yesterday. We're continuing that discussion today. We just talked with Bob Ney from Talk Media News and trying to figure out where Hillary Clinton is going to go after the shellacking that she took in New Hampshire. And as you know, the primaries go to Nevada and South Carolina next, and those are traditionally a stronghold for Hillary Clinton. So we'll discuss that issue for just a little bit more, and then I want to get on to Annette Smith and talk about her issues that she had when a criminal investigation was opened up against her. It's been closed by the Attorney General, but sort of recap what your thoughts are. We had a lot of people calling in on that issue last week, haven't been able to sort of get back to this and update that story, but wanted to do that. But first, let's talk about Bernie Sanders or Annette Smith, if you wish, and we'll continue our conversation that we started at the beginning of the program. Let's go to Brian in Montpelier. Brian, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I guess I have a question about what purpose the superdelegates serve. It seems to me that their only purpose is to allow the DNC to maintain control of the election, which really isn't democracy. It's democracy at its worst, I guess. It's them maintaining control over the lower income and middle income people. Doesn't it seem that way to you?
Well, it's certainly their process. So it's their process, and you know they make the rules. I do think that there is this perception that falls right into Bernie Sanders' sort of mantra that, look, you know, we're going through this process, and you know, superdelegates are delegates that can pledge either way to where they were going. Certainly, it was meant to put some stability into the system, and so that it wouldn't be chaotic and that they could come out of the convention pretty united, I gather, from the Democratic Party. But, you know, I don't know everything about superdelegates. I don't know. I think they were developed after the Carter sort of Ted Kennedy clash, but I don't remember that. But it does. I can say this. The superdelegate discussion that we're having this morning does raise the issue of what, and superdelegates, for those that don't know, are party officials and elected officials that have a vote at the convention that necessarily are not pledged. They can go either way in terms of where they go, but they are those officials, those party officials, and those elected officials that can make a difference at a convention. So that's, you know, it's an interesting sort of I think it really plays into what Bernie Sanders is discussing out there, and it's one thing that he's got a message, everyone. I the message is something that Hillary is having a hard time knocking back, and that is that, you know, his message is the political and economic systems are rigged, and that is something that Hillary Clinton is not effectively knocking back. Matter of fact, it's a twofer for Sanders in that he can talk about the system in general, and he captures Clinton into that generalization by saying that the system is rigged, because he portrays her as part of the problem, not the solution. And that's why he's been hammering away at the fact that Clinton is beholden to the Wall Street firms, you know, that have paid her lucrative speaking fees. If you wish to join our conversation, I'm going to switch momentarily to the Annette Smith issue, but if you want to join our conversation about the huge victory in New Hampshire by Bernie Sanders, I certainly, you know, we have two people that use Y's in front of their various words. One is Bernie Sanders, the other is Donald Trump. I wonder if they're both the front runners. I wonder if you put huge and use the Y, that's a ticket to winning elections. But if you want to talk about Bernie Sanders, if you want to talk about the primary in New Hampshire a few days ago, give us a call at 802-244-1777. Toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Great. So I heard it described that the percentage of Hillary with the people feeling her untrustworthy was just below Saddam Hussein. So she's in a pretty big class of people right there. And I think it's more than Wall Street. I mean, it's much more than Wall Street. You do know the situation with the State Department where they made a deal with a reporter? You know, this thing that was brought to light today?
No, I haven't read that, Sam. And
it should come up in the debate, because not only does it prove that she's not trustworthy, it shows her total incompetence, because a good conspiracy should never be written down. And they wrote it down. So they made a deal with some reporter that they were going to leak reports to him so they can get a favorable review on what they were doing. And they wrote it down.
You know, one of the things that you do bring up, Sam, though, is that is really, really interesting. Out of the poll results, and these were the exit polls out of New Hampshire, is that she does have a problem. And, you know, some of these instances may sort of bring that perception along. She has a problem with trust. The Bernie Sanders certainly, of those people that said that trust was the number one factor in deciding who they were going to vote for on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders won overwhelmingly. And Hillary Clinton has a trust problem, and she needs to turn that around, because that is like the third rail in politics.
How are you going to turn the facts around? How are you going to change the facts?
Well, that's her responsibility to try to figure out. I don't know, Sam.
And then when you turn around, they got these super delegates. At some point in time, everybody's going to say, yeah, he's right. It is rigged. This is rigged. And if they rig this, they're going to make 1968 Chicago look like a picnic at this next convention.
I think you've got a fair point there, Sam. I think, you know, the fact is that if there's a perception along the way, and we got a long way to go, and by the way, the calendar favors Clinton on this, we got a long way to go in terms of what is going to be the final result. We've got South Carolina, Nevada. Most people think those are going to be good victories for the Clinton campaign. But remember what I said. All Bernie has to do is exceed expectations. He doesn't necessarily have to win in South Carolina and Nevada in order to win. It's a funny quirk in presidential politics. You have to beat expectations. And if Bernie Sanders has low expectations in South Carolina and Nevada versus Hillary Clinton, and he exceeds those expectations, boy, is the Clinton campaign in trouble. Let's go to Dennis in Georgia. Dennis, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hey, good show, Mike. I think you made a good point. It's still a long ways to go. The only thing that I noticed the other night that I think is telling is during Hillary's speech, everything she said was I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. During Bernie's speech, everything he said was we. And he's got the momentum, and the money he raised as a result of that speech is also, I think, a telltale sign. Clinton's campaign is not willing to divulge how much they raised. So that says it all.
Yeah, and
watch that speech versus Trump's speech. Trump has absolutely no depth whatsoever. He was all over the place, whereas Sanders kept to his sound points and did a phenomenal job.
You know, Dennis, it's an interesting point that you raised. I mean, if I read it correctly, it was like $5.4 million he raised right after that speech, and that's a lot of money for basically 2 days or 1 day after the election. And you're right, probably Clinton isn't releasing those numbers because they're probably not as high as Bernie Sanders, I would imagine.
Right, exactly. I think it's they took Bernie for granted, which everybody has throughout his entire political career, and now they're paying the price, and he's got momentum. It'll be interesting to see how it goes from here. But keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Dennis, for your phone call. And what Dennis raises is a lot of people didn't believe in Bernie Sanders, including politicians here in Vermont. I mean, look at it. You had Governor Peter Shumlin over in New Hampshire. You had former Governor Dean, former Governor Kunin over in New Hampshire campaigning for Hillary. And Hillary had a lot of surrogates. I mentioned this on the air. When I was down in New Hampshire, a lot of surrogates in the media center for Hillary Clinton. And even, you know, U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy supports Hillary Clinton. But perhaps they're rethinking that or trying to figure out at least whether they made the right political decision. No doubt they calculated that Bernie Sanders' presidential aspirations would have ended by now. They thought that he would be out by now, and most Democrats would be supporting Clinton. Of course, Bernie has proved them wrong, and Bernie supporters, it'll be very interesting if Bernie supporters now forgive them, because the calculation, I gotta believe that the calculation was that Bernie will be out early and that Bernie supporters would forgive them for their endorsement because his candidacy never amounted to much. So no harm, no foul, you know, that sort of thing. But boy, he has exceeded expectations. And the calculation that Bernie would disappear from national politics and the national political scene in quick order, we all know now that's false. And chances are that he will continue his presidential bid longer than anybody expected. Now, as the caller pointed out, there's a long way to go in this campaign season. And as I've pointed out just a moment ago, South Carolina and Nevada seem to be Clinton territory, at least at the moment. But again, Bernie doesn't have to win those. He just has to exceed expectations. And his expectations right now are fairly low. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. As I promised, I said I would swing back to Annette Smith. Who is Annette Smith, and why am I talking about her? Annette Smith is the executive director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, and she's, I guess you could describe her as an activist. She's taken the time to learn the process of regulating large-scale energy projects such as wind and solar, and importantly, she's also come to represent and be a voice for Vermonters who are impacted by these large projects, who can't afford the well-heeled lawyers that the utilities and the developers can, and who towns and people who don't feel they're being heard in the process. Her organization is made up mostly of volunteers, and they are frequently the minority opposition, but they are engaged, they're organized, and certainly they are vocal. And her message is this, that our energy permitting process and the way that it goes, the quasi-judicial permitting process, she claims is rigged in the favors of utility and wealthy developers and against the participation of average, everyday Vermonters and certainly local communities. And why am I talking about her? Well, recently her advocacy against wind, industrial wind, and the placement of wind towers on the tops of Vermont's mountains, boy, have they caught the attention and drawn the ire of lawyers representing wind developers. And a secret complaint a month ago or so, a complaint against Smith was filed with the Attorney General's office. And the complaint alleged that she had practiced law without a license. And at one time, there was a criminal investigation underway by the Attorney General's office to follow up on this complaint. And there is an update here. The update is that the AG has dropped the investigation and said they are not going to prosecute Annette Smith. And we also find that a lawyer, Richie Berger, has said that he was the person who complained. Now, Richie Berger and the law firm do represent wind developers. And what I found fascinating about that, first of all, Richie Berger is a very, very smart person, and he's smarter politically than this. I don't know what he was thinking, but this was certainly perceived as stomping on somebody's First Amendment rights. And secondly, this incident has probably done more damage to wind development in Vermont than Annette Smith and her organization could have done on her own. I don't think you can underestimate the political miscalculation that this sort of episode, this starting of an investigation, this filing of a complaint had in terms of setting back future siting of wind and solar projects. You know, one of the things that struck me, because this complaint in my mind, and be interested in your opinion, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. What struck me and what troubled me about this complaint is that the intent seemed, and it seemed to want to preserve the advantages that Annette Smith says are all towards the energy insiders in the regulatory process, that they want to preserve that. And that sort of, the complaint sort of cemented that belief in, that they will go to links in order to quiet Annette Smith. And the fact that someone took the time to exploit a secretive process to silence any resistance to wind development, I think, highlights fear in the wind development community that the merits of their position or their plan will not be able to withstand the broader public scrutiny. And this tactic should set off alarm bells for all Vermonters. And in the end, the AG did the right thing by dropping this suit. But the whole incident should trouble us. It should really trouble us in terms of advocacy. Because in many ways, Bernie Sanders is saying, you know, his passion, his outspokenness of matters of inequality have taken him to the top of presidential politics. And his message is quite similar to Smith's. He's committed to exposing what he calls a rigged economic and political system. And Smith's message regarding our energy permitting process, she claims, as I said earlier, that the quasi-judicial permitting process is rigged in favor of utilities and wealthy developers and against the participation of average, everyday Vermonters and local communities. If you have an opinion on this, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is something that has flown under the radar screen, is WCAX has requested more information about the travel expense of the governor and his entourage for their trip to Paris. And if you remember, the governor's office had reported they spent about $1,600 of state money for their trip to Paris, and many people had scratched their heads. And I want to get into that in just a moment in terms of what is going on behind the scenes with this request for expenses, because we talk about transparency. Well, here's an instance where I think we've got to question whether government is providing the transparency that we need. So, Annette Smith, what do you think? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
I bicycled across Kansas, and there was thousands of acres of wind farms out there. In flyover country, as far as I'm concerned, the best place to have the windmills or the wind power stuff. In New England, now it's a terrible place to have it for one big reason, and that's we got beautiful mountains, and it spoils the view.
So let me add, whether you're for or against wind, and believe me, a lot of people that are for wind power didn't like the tactics that were deployed on Annette Smith. What did you think about the tactics?
Well, I really didn't follow it, so I can't comment on it.
Well,
that's my problem on that one there. But the other question is wind power self-supported, or does it have to have government help?
Well, right now it has government help. It has sort of subsidies. Let's go to Dale in Burlington. Dale, you're on open mic.
I think the definition of this has been hit on several different occasions during the last 2 hours of your show. It's trust. I'm talking about Shumlin, I'm talking about Clinton, and I'm talking about people like Madeleine Albright with her comments. It's trust. Nobody trusts Hillary Clinton. Nobody trusts the Clintons because they do not deserve any trust. And that's why Bernie is doing well. And I'll Because I predicted Bernie was going to be long gone by now, and I was wrong. I'll eat crow.
Dale, I was going to bring that up, that yeah, you predicted.
I was wrong, and I'll eat crow on it, and I'm kind of glad that I'm eating crow, because it's good to see crow stuffed down Clinton's throat. But that's the problem. It's the trust. Nobody trusts Shumlin anymore. That's why he's not running. And I'm certain that's the reason behind researching who paid for what on the Paris trip. And why would anyone want Shumlin and his trust factor campaigning for them. And I think that bit Hillary right in her big butt, and that's fine, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you for leaving it at that. Ken in Hyde Park. Ken, you're on open mic.
Yeah, going back to Annette Smith, it's really a fascinating question in terms of what kind of registration we want from somebody who is doing quasi-legal or legal services. I'm an expert witness. I was frequently called in to do very heavy-duty statistical modeling for antitrust and discrimination, et cetera. Lawyers had absolutely no idea what was going on, so we had to come in and teach them how to do it. We also had to teach them how to ask us what they needed to ask in order to draw out what we had done. I've practiced law in federal court, even though I'm not a lawyer. And yet, there's a point where you back off and say, wait a minute, I am not a lawyer. I am an expert or a quasi-expert in this field. I should be working with a lawyer to do this. Now, if she's as good as she says she is, she should be able to find a lawyer who is not in the forefront of all this, but who can use her as either a behind the scenes or on the stand expert to understand how to present the case as it goes through the process. So Ken, I think it's wrong to shut her down, but at the same time, she has to realize that there's a place where you need a lawyer who understands the nuances of prosecuting a case or bringing suits or whatever you want to call that, rather than the content of the case.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for your phone call. I think she's actually called for that, if I'm reading the news accounts right. Let's define where the boundaries are, because she claims it's advocacy, and she's helping communities to help themselves. And that is something that we will need to find out, I guess, in the future. When we come back, let's turn to requests for the Paris trip. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. You know what? I'm looking at the clock. I'm not going to give this next subject enough time, and we have a guest in studio. I'm not going to give this subject enough time, which is the CAX request for more information about travel expenses to Paris. We'll push that off to tomorrow, which I think is an important topic. But first, I want to introduce a guest here. Is Ken Squire.
Yeah. I have a question for you. That super delegate business, this election's already over, and Hillary's won. She's leading, 330, 300-something to 40?
It's around that, yeah.
And this is controlled by the party, and controlling the party for the most part of the Clintons. And I don't grasp how you can get a vote that was as outstanding for Bernie as it was in New Hampshire. He wins by 22%, 50,000 votes. And now that the frosting is settled down here, she's exactly even with him, with these super delegates.
Well,
you take it in Florida or Texas, Ohio, New York, or California, that's pretty good arithmetic, and because that's the Democratic Party, and I think she's sitting there like the cat that ate the canary, because she knows she's got those delegates, and so the vote doesn't amount to a damn.
Well, the Clinton campaign would say, Ken, that win the primaries, you win the election, that the superdelegates won't come into play because you'll have enough delegates to overcome them.
But they did already. He won by, would give him the delegates. The delegates are broken in half in the state of New Hampshire.
Yeah, but here's the thing, I think.
14 to 14.
Yeah, I think the thing that the Clinton campaign would say is, these superdelegates won't even come into play if you get enough delegates through the primary. If you get enough delegates through the primary. They will come into play if it's close.
It's a loaded roulette table is what it is. And I challenge you for tomorrow's program to give us more input about what protects the voter who really puts a lot of thought in this and goes and votes. Anyway, that's my question.
Thank you very much.
Well, I thought I'd leave you with that. I didn't want you getting any sleep tonight.
I've got my homework cut out for me. I got a homework assignment. Thank you so much.
Good show.
Well, thank you.
You did a great job down there in New Hampshire.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That means a lot. So tomorrow what we'll do is we'll talk about this issue, this homework assignment that I got from Mr. Squires, and we'll talk about WCAX's information request. And, of course, we'll be at the State House tomorrow, and we'll be talking with various legislators about issues that are going to be coming up in the legislative process. I want to thank my guest today, with Tiffany Bloomley and Kara Brown, for discussing those women's issues that we discussed earlier. And I want to thank you for your phone calls. You've been very engaged listeners today, and I really appreciate it. I've got my homework assignment for tomorrow. I've got the guests lined up at the State House. We'll talk again tomorrow when we will be at the Vermont State House. This is Open Mic on WDEV News Radio, AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM from Island Pond.